Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And it's just a two-man episode, so it's just us today, Juan. And as always, this episode was recorded before a live Studio Ostrich. Wani B, what's in time for today's show?
Hey, Kosi, how you doing? Today, good, man. We have some more trailer trash for you guys. We go over the trailers for Penguin and the trailer for the movie Smile 2. Then we get into another sports ball segment.
Let's do it.
Mostly cover the NBA, cover what's going on in the finals for the most part, some of the movement early in the offseason.
Big day today too, man.
Then we have a review for you guys for the newly released House of the Dragon Season 2.
Oh, yeah.
First episode just came out. Some big twists, some big moves in this
already,
week.
Already going for it.
We'll have these reviews for you. Get to keep up with the season as it comes along.
Yes, sir.
So, first of all, let's get started with trailer trash. So, right off the bat, we're going to start off with the trailer for The Penguin. This is a proper trailer, not a teaser.
Yeah, it's actually, I think we got a bunch of teasers like all the way back from like last year. But this is the proper like, hey, here's the plot, here's what's happening. And looked awesome, dude. Looked awesome.
So Kosi, bro, walk us through the plot of the trailer a little bit.
So in this one, it really does, it takes place like the next day. Like, because at the end of The Batman, the 2022 film, at the end, so Batman is like flooded all of Gotham and whatnot. And so there's now this power vacuum now, because like he's with the events of the film, a lot of the crime bosses in Gotham have all been taken out. So there's a big power vacuum now. The Penguin, who was great as played by Colin Farrell in the movie, he's now saying, "Oh snap! There's like there's a opportunity for me to come in and like take over." So it's just about his rise to power, becoming the Penguin. So, you know, it's really, really cool concept. I like what they're doing. It just looks great, man. That's like the thing that got me off the bat. Looks like the movie. It looks like HBO Max are really, really putting a lot of big hitters
like
into this.
Some of these old school pulpy crime thrillers.
Yes, most definitely.
Right. It gives off vibes from a little bit of vibes actually from some of those Marvel Netflix shows actually. But just like Daredevil and stuff.
Yeah. Like its whole look.
Yeah, but it's just kind of these old school kind of gangsters. And I mean, I know it's called Gotham, but you know, it's obviously a stand-in for New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or Chicago.
Any Crimeville, USA.
Yeah. So no, it looks like a good movie. Some of the main actors in it, we got. What's her name? Christina Milioti.
Christina Milioti, yeah. She played your mother in How I Met Your Mother.
She played the mother in How I Met Your Mother.
She's playing Sofia Falcone. She's Carmel Falcone's daughter.
She looks very deadly, very serious in this role. Very interesting. Who else? We got that guy. What's his name? Doug from House of Cards. I don't remember the actor's name.
I have the list here. Well, I looked it up. Clancy Brown was the other guy.
Clancy Brown?
The voice of Mr. Krabs.
The voice of Mr. Krabs. He recently was in that Gen V show, kind of the principal that got set on fire.
Yeah. No, it's a great-looking cast. Theo Rossi, he was in Marvel Netflix show. He was Shades in Luke Cage. I don't know if you saw. Luke Cage.
Shades. Yeah, I remember that guy. I hadn't recognized him in the trailer.
Yeah.
No, it looks like it could be fun. It's definitely trying to go back to that. It doesn't really look almost like a superhero show. It looks more like just a straight crime thriller, right? Like an alternate kind of New York in the 80s type vibe, casino type vibe.
You definitely Scorsese Casino. So what do you think about this whole idea of, you know, we had the movie The Batman, and now we're getting like a spinoff miniseries on a streaming service about one of the villains? What do you think about just
it's
that?
Like a secondary villain, too.
Yeah.
We are supposed to be getting another Batman movie, right? It's in the works with Matt Reeves as well.
Yeah. Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson and them are still working on that. But, like, what do you think of having this kind of like in the meantime while they make a movie?
I think it could be fun. The Batman movie was a pretty solid movie overall, better than I expected, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, you know, I'm not as hyped for it as I was for stuff like House of the Dragon, The Boys.
Right, right.
Some of these other big releases this year. But I think it could be a fun show. I think it could be a fun, and Colin Farrell pretty much aces everything he's in. So that's another big plus coming into this. To this show.
I was so blown away by his performance in the Bat, because you know, with all that makeup and whatnot, you really can't tell.
A lot of prosthetics. It's great, hard prosthetic, to tell. Dude. You notice if you look closely. See the mannerisms. Yes. You see the expressions. You can tell it's Colin Farrell under there, but it takes a second.
Yeah,
the prosthetics does a good job of setting him apart, and he does a good job of acting through them.
Yeah, I think I just slept on Colin Farrell. Like, remember we saw him in the Banshees of Inisherin. I think last year.
Banshees of
Inisherin. He was great in that one. Just fantastic.
In Bruges.
In Bruges, yes, he's amazing. Like,
yeah, that's one of his top roles. I mean, he's had a lot of good roles. He's had some bad roles. Alexander the Great was a bizarre movie.
Even though the movie wasn't great, he was great as Bullseye in the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
Yeah, he was great. I like the Daredevil movie.
Yeah, okay.
He was pretty good in that True Detective season.
Oh, he was in
True Detective season 2.
Oh,
bad season.
Okay,
I
didn't see that.
He was pretty good in that role.
Okay.
The Gentleman. He had a good minor role in The Gentleman.
Yes. Okay.
With Guy Ritchie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
oh,
it's
man.
He's done good stuff. He's done good work. It's I can't. He doesn't disappoint me almost ever.
Yeah. I'm just looking at this. Oh, dude, We forgot. Mark Strong is in this in an undisclosed role too. So like.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think we did see Mark Strong.
Yeah. I think I saw him in like some promotional material. I don't know. Maybe I was just seeing things,
I don't think he showed up in the trailer at the very least.
Or was that?
I've seen him a lot. He played a heavy role, so she's going to be heavily involved.
Yeah, yeah. She's trying to get revenge for her dad. There's a whole fight now for that role.
It's a fight to see who the main crime boss of Gotham City is going to be.
I think it's kind of cool now. Like, you know, and thanks to like a little scene at the end, we know that there's a Joker out there. So now we have like a Joker. We have like a Penguin. Maybe a Two-Face out there, like they're kind of bringing.
Riddler. I don't think we've established Two-Face.
But you see them kind of Matt Reeves and
I do like
putting them together.
Borderline horror take. It's not really horror, but you know the Riddler was not the Riddler we're used to seeing.
Yeah,
we haven't really ever seen that kind of a presentation.
That was a take.
Penguin is not as goofy as he, I mean, he's not as creepy and almost otherworldly as he was in the Burton film.
Yeah, he's no DeVito. He's no DeVito.
But he's not. If you ever watched the animated series, the Penguin's just like this rich, kind of smarmy. You know, this seems like a little bit of a harder, more real.
Yeah, a gangster
like an actual gangster.
Like this Penguin can really reach out and touch you, and it's he's scary. He's really intimidating, and it looks awesome. Again, it's coming from Matt Reeves and the team that made the Batman, and it's coming to Max this September, so we don't have to wait too long. Just
not too long, a
couple months. So looks awesome.
So moving on, we're gonna go over the trailer for Smile 2.
Oh man.
So I'll come clean here. I did not watch the first Smile. Kosi, you'll have to bring this up. It seems the basic concept watching through the trailers for both the first and second one is that a central lead woman gets haunted by people who smile real creepy.
In a way, like, yeah, you're basically in a sense. So like it's to the movie, it's about like a kind of entity or a monster that kind of that stalks a person, and it enters its victim and makes them, you know, do horrible things to themselves, and it kind of passes on like a evil virus. So if you see someone do it and they smile at you and they hurt themselves, now you have it now. So it's like a virus that keeps on giving in the worst way. And so that came out in 2022. So now fast forward to 2024, and it was a mild hit, that 2022 film from Smile by Parker Finn. It was a great movie. And now it got a sequel. And now it follows a kind of like a Lady Gaga-esque kind of pop star.
Yes.
Which is kind of a cool concept.
Hey, what was her name? She's the girl who played Jasmine in...
Yes. Naomi Scott is her name.
Naomi Scott.
Great actress. Yeah. So she plays like a Lady Gaga-esque performer who is now being stalked and possibly, it's haunted by this smile curse. kind of bringing it global, because it's because the first one was kind of like, you know, kind of confined to like one woman and her family, but this one they could really take it global, which is kind of a really cool idea. So I don't know what you thought about this trailer.
I mean, it does a great job of bringing up the deep creepiness of that kind of deep, empty smile.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Man, watching you watch the trailers, because we watched the trailers back to back, watching you watch them was actually pretty enjoyable, because, you know, it's creepy. Like, yeah, you're right.
No, those smiles are very creepy, and as someone who can do a pretty solid creepy smile, I'm telling you, it's a good way to scare people.
Guys, Juan has an excellent creepy smell. He's doing it right now. All right, dude. It's enough, man. Yeah,
we're gonna get the curse going in here.
Uh-oh.
No, look, I love horror movies. I think
Yeah,
Moody are big fans of horror movies in general.
Yeah, we love horror over here.
It looks like it's gonna be a fun movie.
Yeah.
It looks like it's gonna be a fun movie.
Looks fun, great concept, great people.
Looks like a good, not a slasher, but like a creepy thriller.
Creepy thriller, supernatural in nature. Yeah, it has all the makings of
some gore, some kills.
The first one prided itself on having some pretty gory kills. It was rated R, so it was one of those where it kind of definitely pushed the envelope. The opening kill of the first smile, I remember vividly. So yeah, and we saw kind of alluded to in this one with the whole with the weight, the weight to the face. So
yeah, smashing himself in the face with the weight. No, I'm glad horror's kind of become a big deal in Hollywood.
Yeah.
They can make these movies relatively cheap. They make good money. They make good profit.
Yeah.
And the mid-budget movie, I mean, you see a lot of indie films nowadays, but the mid-budget kings tend to be horror movies.
Yeah. No, I'm glad.
You don't need the big CGI fight scene at the end. You don't need to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on creating green screen stuff.
And with horror, I think there's more like room to like take more risks, do more crazy stuff.
There is. I mean, obviously there's IP plays where you see new Halloween movies, new these movies. But
Scream, yeah.
For the most part, some of the most original works, some of the most creative ideas, some of the most out there ideas coming out in horror movies. And, you know, I highly encourage you, if you're the kind of person that thinks, no, horror's not for me, I'll get too scared, you know, push past it.
No, I understand, because my girlfriend, she's not into horror, but I think there are a lot of, like, horror, like, really cool movies that get you into horror, like Megan. Megan's a cool, like, you know, it's creepy, has some creepy stuff. The Happy Death Day movies, especially the first one. I say they're really cool, like, entryway horror, before we get to the harder stuff. But, yeah, there are a lot of, like, really interesting horror movies out there for all kinds of palettes, because, you know, no one likes being jump scared or freaked out, but
some people do. I definitely appreciate that horror movies nowadays don't rely on jump scares. They don't rely on over the top gore.
Yeah. Oh yes.
There was a while there where a horror movie meant either, you know, to be scary, it was going to have a big scream at a quiet moment.
Really annoying.
Or it was going to, you know, saw a guy's Achilles tendon off and watch you, you know, if you ever watch Hostel, torture porn.
Yeah, just scream. Yeah.
No, it was some rough stuff. So I'm glad horror was involved into this artistic medium, this creative medium for interesting ideas and new. We've already talked about some of them on here. Late Night with the Devil.
Also In a Violent Nature, which I loved.
We've done a couple of, like, reviews and looks at these, and it's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Looking forward to it. So I think that's it for Trailer Trash.
Yes, sir.
Now we're going to do – last time it was an episode where we're going to make it an ongoing segment from now on.
Couldn't keep it down.
It was sports ball. All right. So, Cosey.
What's up, brother?
Big deal, of course.
Yeah,
these days in sports ball, you know, basketball, we'll call it basketball.
Yeah, of course, yes, basketball.
So, NBA Finals. NBA Finals are over. Celtics have won. Mavericks got their ass kicked.
I'm glad the best team in the NBA was rewarded with a world championship. But look, kudos to the Mavericks. Kudos to Jason Kidd. Kudos to Luka. Kudos to Kyrie. That whole squad, you know, it's not easy to get to the finals. They kind of put their stuff together half at the trade. A lot of things were working against them, but against all odds, they got there. That being said, Joe Mazzulla, Jason Tatum, Jason Brown, all them, they were on a mission, and you know they're rewarded for their success. And Chris Apps Porzingis too. Just shout out to him. Just great
year.
You know,
I don't think we honestly gave enough credit to the Celtics. I know I didn't.
I did not either.
I mean, they've had good teams over the past few years, right? They made the finals 2 years ago,
which with a pretty good team.
Pretty
solid team.
I mean, they took advantage of some injuries. Chris Middleton was injured.
Middleton was out.
Sixers blew a chance to beat them.
Yeah.
No, but and then last year they had that bad collapse against Miami. After frankly, they were down 3-0 against the Sixers, right?
Yeah, and
they should have lost in the second round. They were getting their ass kicked.
But I liked how you know they were able to claw their way
back.
They
were able to claw back twice. They won three games in a row both the second and third round. Just weren't able to pull it off in game seven on their home court.
They're a mentally tough team. Very well coached. Joe Mazzulla is a great guy.
I think
guy.
They needed
great
to
coach.
Have those losses. I think if you saw a particular, Jaylen Brown, he just won finals MVP. Jaylen Brown from even last year is not winning finals MVP.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying he was a bad player. It's a lot of people that thought he got overpaid. He got the biggest contract in NBA history this past offseason.
And it put a huge target on his back. It's like, all right, now you got to deliver
because
all that.
Because he was terrible that Miami series last year. He's a big part of the reason why they went down 3-0 and eventually lost.
Yeah.
You know, he was a big part of the reason why they didn't pull through against the Warriors the year before. It's not that he was bad, but he was not as good as he quite needed to be.
He was good, but he just wasn't showing up when it mattered. It's like, it's a tale of oldest time. Like, you have a really good player, but when we need you the most, like, can you really get it done? He just wasn't
doing
it.
He had big flaws. His defense wasn't as good as it should have been.
He's definitely improved that, yes.
His playmaking, his decision-making were often off against excellent defenses. And I'll tell you right now, he flipped the switch. I think it is one of the weaker finals MVPs. If you look at it, he didn't have an overwhelmingly good series, right? I don't think you could make a strong
argument. It felt almost like a season achievement award. It's like, all right,
achievement award would have still gone to Jason Tatum.
Oh, really? You think Tatum still should have?
Tatum was the best player pretty much all year.
Okay.
He just shot terribly during the finals.
Because usually
he shot horrifically during the NBA finals.
Yeah.
We don't really talk about that as well. He made other plays. He obviously was great passing the ball. He was great defending. He would rebound. You know, he put the Celtics in position to win. The Mavericks were clearly double teaming him and, you know, going after him offensively. But he still shot terribly. You can't get around that. Frankly, it does. Like, Boston didn't really play great finals, is the crazy thing about this. As dominant as they looked and as easily as they won, you know, they didn't have these games where everybody was hitting their shots and, you know, they were clearly playing the best basketball of their season.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think they still looked I think that's still a testament to how good they are.
That's actually my point, that, you know, game two, they only won by like 7 points. But that should have easily been a 20-point game if Boston was hitting their shots.
But also, you can just point back to throughout the – I know it's the playoffs and the regular season aren't the same thing. But if you look back, they were just like clockwork beating people up that same way all year.
So they had, I think, a top 10 all-time point differential, basically. So their win total was pretty good still. It was 64 wins. Point differential is kind of how many points you scored versus how many points your opponent scored. Mm-hmm. So it gives you kind of a little more depth, right?
Instead of
wins, losses, right? If you get big blowouts, generally that means you're better than somebody who's scraping by and wins, generally.
Yes,
right?
So,
frankly, I think we talked about this while we were watching some of these playoff games. You know, this is a team where their fifth best player was Derek White.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got Al Horford coming off the bench. And they barely even need him. That's insane.
That's an embarrassment of riches.
You know, after their top six, they didn't have a ton. Sam Hauser and Pritchard did their jobs, but they weren't exactly dominant.
Yeah, like no one's scared. No, like offense, but no one's like scared of them.
Sam Hauser did pretty good, especially in that game five.
And Big Pritch with that shot, the half court shot.
He had two half court shots in that series, actually. Those were big moments. But, you know, they didn't have, you know, they weren't 10 deep. But their top six has got to be one of the most ridiculous.
And that's what people throughout the NBA have been searching for. Hey, how can we like overload our top five so we're to the point where we don't have to go to our bench?
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the 2004 Pistons. This team has more star power. This team has more star power.
More star power than them, but let's go on.
It's kind of that, okay, like Jason Tatum, you look at the best players in the playoffs, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, they're clearly not on Luka's level, right?
Of course.
They're clearly not on Jokic's level.
Side, I bubble from that. Do you think now they are, now they have hardware? Because Luka does not. I know it doesn't matter.
So Luka's a pretty bad defender. That's the big thing. But still, I mean, offensively, there's no comparison.
Okay, no, I agree.
I mean, offense tends to be more important. I do think when you're as bad at defense as Luka, it takes away a lot of the offense.
It definitely does.
It's a Dame Lillard special where it's like if you're Matador defensive board, it's one thing to be mediocre at defense. Like Steph Curry's not a great defender.
He gets the job done.
But he puts up some fight at the point of attack.
That's all you need.
You know, Luka did not, for the most part. They were going at him. They were picking on him.
Yeah, they knew.
And they were getting free shots at the rim. They were getting spraying it out to shooters after getting collapsed in the defense. It was bad. It's definitely...
No Mavericks.
It's one of the best teams we've seen in a couple of years. It's not going to match up with some of the all-time teams. You know, we'll see what happens next year.
We got to wait.
We'll see what happens next year. Part of the problem is that... You know, you have to acknowledge that the entire East, their entire opponent lineup, they were all injured. Donovan Mitchell was injured. The Knicks got injured.
Pretty easy East, if you think about it.
Tyrese Halliburton got injured. Even the Mavericks were a four seed that like got hot at the right time and happened to face some.
You know what's crazy? Before this season, I was thinking, okay, clearly the Celtics are going to come out the East. But I was still saying... The West, the Wild West.
I actually thought with Damian Lillard, the Bucks had a chance, but then Giannis was injured as well. Mm. Giannis, Embiid, everybody. There really was nobody in the East to challenge the Celtics.
Yeah.
I frankly think they would have won anyways, but they might have been vulnerable without Porzingis. They had a couple of close games against the Pacers where it looks like the Pacers could have taken a lead against them. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see a little bit next year. I'm not ready to crown them an all-time dominant team without seeing them.
Yeah.
You know, if they lose in the first round or second round next year.
But real quick, just back to my point. I'm about to lose it. The point. The way the West is set up, you would have thought it doesn't matter whoever's in the top five of the West. Whoever comes out, they might just win the title. And that's even with how good the Celtics were. But to see how the West kind of fell apart. In the playoffs, and like there wasn't a clear like.
It was a little bit. Best. The Nuggets were supposed to be the favorites, and then they basically, you know, partly because Jamal Murray didn't quite look the same as last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they sort of won against Minnesota, but frankly, Minnesota had their asses kicked, and then they were just a little too young and too inexperienced to basically put their foot on the throats and finish the job. And you saw it against Dallas as well, Minnesota. Arguably had more talent, but they couldn't make their shots. They couldn't make those extra plays. They couldn't make Dallas pay for overloading on Anthony Edwards.
Yeah,
and, you know Ant needs a little more. His conditioning needs a little bit of work. His decision making needs a little bit of work.
But you can see like the raw talent that's there, and just I think he just ran out of juice. That's what it looked like.
He ran out of juice a little bit, but it's also his decision making. Left something to be desired, frankly. Like he got double teamed a lot. And you can see the difference between Jason Tatum knowing what to do with those double teams and Ant not knowing.
Mm.
Still, they got a bright future. It's going to be interesting. There's been a lot of parity. Like you could easily see two entirely different teams that didn't even make the finals next year, right? You could easily see Minnesota against the Sixers or against the Bucks in the finals next year.
Minnesota,
and it wouldn't be shocking.
Minnesota will have to definitely go through Denver again because I don't see Denver going anywhere. But
Denver's not going to go anywhere.
OKC is not going to go anywhere. Memphis, Jaws coming back. I know, like he's.
We'll see about Memphis. They had a big streak upwards for a couple of years, and everybody kind of forgot about them for good reason. I mean, frankly, with Jaws issues. They haven't been the same team since. But they do have. They are a threat to look out for.
I'm just curious about them. That's all.
And then a couple other news before we finish off the sports ball. So J.J. Redick, coach of the Celtic or Lakers. Sorry,
new head coach of the Lakers.
I'm honestly not sure who that's the worst move for.
What do you? Okay, how do you figure?
In the sense of okay, so J.J.'s his first coaching job. You know, you're the Lakers, your team. Yeah, you went to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, but you got swept, and you had some easy opponents along the way. They haven't really been past the first round. They've been a meaningful challenger since that 2020 championship, right? And they don't have that much flexibility to add major stars or anything. I don't see that putting J.J. Redick in there, even if he turns out to be a good coach, which is an open question. I don't see that he turns this franchise around just by himself.
Like, it's not just because, and the Mind the Game podcast is great. I think I don't like this because, not against J.J. Redick, but just that I don't see him having any coaching, just lack coaching experience.
We've already seen it a couple of times, like, oh yeah, Steve Nash suddenly got to be coach of the Brooklyn Nets.
And how that
turned
out.
And it became a complete disaster.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about somebody coming in with zero experience.
The only thing that gives me kind of, like, hope is at least the assistants, because I heard, like, Chauncey Billups is someone he's looking at to bring on, like, former, like,
they might
players
have,
that have coaching experience, he
they
can
might have
surround
some
himself.
Good assistants, but, you know, first-time coaches we've seen be successful, usually were already at least in the coaching circuit, right? It wasn't their literal first time on their bench. J.J. Redick just finished calling the NBA Finals for ESPN.
Yeah, that's
right?
that's crazy
about
work.
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Again, sometimes it's worked out. I think Steve Kerr had a similar situation when he got started.
Yeah. But he was an assistant.
I remember if he was. But keep in mind, at the time, the Warriors were at best an up-and-coming team, right? They were not the juggernaut we ended up knowing them as nowadays. They became a juggernaut as soon as Steve Kerr came in, so that's a good sign. But at the same time, you know, this Lakers team is a team that's theoretically chasing championships. They're a veteran team. They're not interested in being up and coming.
No, they want to win.
I don't know if they
right
have
away.
Time to have JJ learn on the job.
Do you think he'll get the Monty Morris treatment where they just kick you out after 1 year?
Monty Morris, who?
The Detroit Pistons. Oh, did I get his name wrong?
Monty Williams,
sorry. Think Monty Williams. You'll get that treatment and... Where if he doesn't deliver this year, like,
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. The Lakers are a mess. I mean, what was his name? Darvin Ham. You know, took him to the Western Conference Finals. Was the coach of the future. Everybody was all excited, and then he got fired immediately. Lawrence, the white dude who they won a championship with,
For the Lakers.
Yeah.
Used
to coach the Pacers.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah, used to coach the Pacers. Lawrence something.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, but him, after the championship, they kind of got him out.
A year or two later, they fired him too.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole team is a mess. At this point, the most exciting thing they have talking about is potentially drafting Bronny James.
Yeah, that's all they can really hope for.
I don't see the Lakers continuing to be relevant. You know, the LeBron era at this point seems over unless he kind of forces his way to a team that he doesn't have to be. You know, like if he goes to the Sixers, he can be their third best player. He can make plays. I can see that working out for him. But if he's staying here on the Lakers where, you know, he needs to kind of carry the load with AD.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. That means AD needs to just step up, which we all know he can.
To be fair, they both did. They both had great seasons this year, and the Lakers were still terrible. So I don't see where you go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. But, also just RIP to one of our greats in basketball. Crap. I'm forgetting his name.
Jerry West.
No. Well, yes, the logo. Yes. The guy that the NBA logo is based off of.
Yeah, logo, Jerry West. Congrats to the Celtics. I think they have a good chance to repeat next year.
I think so.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And I think that's it for this week's episode of Sports Ball. All right, so moving on to the next topic. We're going to review new big show out this week.
The new one.
House of the Dragon. one of the two big shows actually that just came out this past week.
Yeah, we've been like kind of inundated with like a lot of just great content.
The Boys also recently came out. That's another big show. But House of the Dragon, they just released the first episode of the second season. It's been a little bit of hiatus. I think a few viewers might have forgotten that the show was even coming out. Just because it had been, at least 2 years,
It's been 2 years, yeah, since the season finale of season one.
Right. No, it does make you lose a little bit of momentum when you have that longer break. You almost forget what the show's about, what's going on.
And I understand, you know, they have to, you know, film the show and make it. It's not like an easy undertaking at all, but I think you're right. It definitely, like, kills momentum, especially for a show like that that ended on such a crazy ending.
You end with her son dying, Luke, by a dragon.
R.I.P. Luke, dude.
This big war kicking off.
Dude, I like how he him and his uncle were just, you know, there's play fighting in the sky, and then he just got a little bit too rough.
Yeah, Lucerys, and then he...
And Aemon just...
It was an accident, too. The dragon just kind of took over and did what its instincts told it to.
But, man, even as it happened, I was like, I don't know the story, but I just knew, okay, that's not good. And just the look on his face said it all. I was like, ugh.
Right, yeah, even the guy who did the killing was...
Aemon, yeah.
But no, so we start off this episode basically just following the immediate events of season one. The Queen Rhaenyra, she's basically searching for her son's corpse, trying to find that.
Yeah.
Basically, like, she's been told by letter that her son has died.
Her and her son, too. Her other son, who's up in at the wall right now.
Yeah, in Winterfell. Yeah, Winterfell. He also gets notice.
Yeah.
He's up in Winterfell securing allies for his mother's
claim. With Kreegan Stark. I didn't realize that was, like, they said in there, but also he had, like, the Stark sword, like, the one that Ned had. He had it, like, on his back. I was like, oh, that's
pretty cool.
That was really cool that they had him there. I was like,
that's a nice little touch.
Yeah.
So he, you know, we get to see over the wall, we get to see that glorious view we saw some of the early Game of Thrones seasons, and get some of the reminders of the White Walker and everything else. But, so pretty much right away we go into the politicking.
Right? Oh, the politicking.
It's the Greens versus the Blacks. The Greens are a little more organized at this point. They're talking about the possibilities, they're trying to secure the lords and get people on their side, secure alliances.
Yeah, they have the best. Secure
routes.
Yeah.
The Blacks, at least most of the rest of the crew, Rhaenyra is off trying to find her son, but everybody else...
Splintered, kind of splintered.
A little bit splintered, but also still trying to be effective. They got a blockade set up to prevent trade to King's Landing. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get allies. They obviously got some dragons.
I think they're splintered, but they each are trying to, like, do different things towards the same kind of goal, but it's not unified, really. Well, it's really
because, you know, their leader, the person who's supposed to be unifying...
Aegon.
was Rhaenyra.
She's the Blacks,
she's off, you know, grieving her son, not really taking her queenly duties, you know, particularly seriously.
Which is understandable, though.
It's understandable, but even in the show, it gets called out where it's like, okay, you know, she is the queen. She has a duty. She has all these people that are fighting for her.
That is true.
And frankly, they're probably all going to die if she loses.
In the
war. So she's got a big responsibility. When she finally comes in, her first and I think only words for the episode...
Go get him.
is that she wants Aemon Targaryen. She wants the person who killed her son.
She specifically names him. Like, hey, get this guy.
Specifically names
him. Get him.
And, you know, that was Daemon's plan all along, Matt Smith's character. He wanted to go get revenge for her as a kind of sign of...
Solidarity.
He's kind of a hothead. He's kind of a hothead character. So he always picks the path of most extreme violence.
But also I see it as like he feels as though it's the easiest way, because they even said it. Hey, Aemon and Vhagar, his dragon, are kind of the biggest weapon in
the... The biggest power, because Vhagar is the most powerful dragon alive.
And Aemon
at the time. And Aemon's one of the best swordsmen.
He's nice with the sword.
And the Seven Kingdoms, if not the best.
Yeah.
You know, he's up there for the best. Might not be... And anyone else who's close to him does not have a dragon his size.
Right.
So
I can see Daemon's... Like, idea. Like, okay, let me just go take him out.
And then Daemon, and then Aemon, frankly, seems like he idolized and took after Daemon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, same haircut, same kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
clearly, you know, Charter Island. But anyways, on the green side, the biggest dramas so far, two big dramas. One, the Queen is hooking up with Sir Kristen.
Crispy Cole. That was gross.
Crispy Cream.
Yeah, Sir Crispy Cream Cole. Like, that was gross, bro.
So he's like eating her out. Frankly, you know, calling this guy out because he made a big deal about how Rhaenyra's a snake because she just wanted to get laid with him on the side.
But here you are doing this. It's like,
and then you're kind of doing the same thing. I kind of get it because Rhaenyra made him break his vow first and obviously took advantage of
him. But he was like, hey, Rhaenyra, come like sell oranges with me over here and this other. Yeah, like, but no.
Rhaenyra was like, hey, come stay be my sex doll. That was basically what she saw him as, if we're being real.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'm going to go marry somebody else and be a queen and do all this stuff. But you get to keep fucking me when I feel like it. And so obviously that left him with some heavy trauma.
Yeah, but to see him just fast forward these years later, but yeah, it's, and now it's he's wild. Eating out
the queen. I don't know. At least like the queen's not married to anybody else. I don't know. It seems like it's a little more.
Look, Allison, do what you got to do.
Yeah, it's a little more real, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
So that's one on drama on the side. Probably not like most people on King's Landing probably aren't a fan.
Yeah.
Second big drama. Is the king, Aegon.
This guy.
So Aegon is basically a drunk loser.
He's like Joffrey a little bit. Joffrey vibes. I'm getting Joffrey vibes from him. Because Joffrey
wanted to be king and wanted to be a tyrant.
Oh, this was like kind of hoisted on Aegon.
He had his discipline in a way. He had his evilness, but he was kind of disciplined in a way.
I got you.
Aegon is just a loser fuckboy, right? Does not care. Treats everything as a joke.
Surrounded by yes men too.
Probably a drunk most of the time. Just wants to fuck bitches and party.
But he's like, you know, he's like a lot of people that we might maybe knew in college. Like, I get it, but like you got to be a king. But you got to be a king right now, bro.
But I mean,
like,
he's trained from the beginning to be a king.
He shouldn't be doing this.
And again, it's hard to feel too sorry for him. You know, this is a medieval style world, right? We're not talking about a situation today, you know, like me and you, Kelsey, we got pretty good lives. We're not, you know, super rich royalty or anything, but we got solid lives with normal ass jobs. This was back when being a peasant was terrible.
Life sucked.
When life for most people was not great. And so you get a chance to be the king and you're like, nah, I'm gonna go whole around and get drunk and piss it away.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad. It sucks because his brother, too, Aemon, clearly should be the king, clearly prepared for it, clearly wants it. I think at one point in season one, Aegon pretty much offered him the throne.
Yeah, kind of roundabout way, but like, I think even Aegon knew, like, dude, the way that goes, I gotta do it, so
he's gonna put suck it too, up. But he know. To his credit, he knows he shouldn't be king. And he has some degree of kindness to him, right? Yeah. He seems to at least. In a naive, goofy, poorly thought out way, but he seems to at least.
In his own special way, yeah.
He wants to try to help the common folk and be seen as kind and generous. But, you know, overall, he's more of a joke as king. And the characters, all the main adult characters around him know it.
Man, I think, I guess we're going to, this is full spoiler, go into what happened at the end with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so we're going into what happened at the end. So Rhaenyra comes back, we'll set it up real quick.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra comes back, she tells everybody, all the black team, is like, hey, I want Aemon Targaryen. That's all she said, that was the only lines of the episode. And Daemon is like, that was his plan all along, even before she came back. So he hops on.
Yeah, say less, let me get him.
Immediately, right? So walk us through that scene a little bit, Kosi, as far as setup.
So Aemon just decides, okay, I'm gonna go devise his plan to go get Aemon. So he goes to his buddy. So he knows this guy and it's these characters that I'm not really familiar with. I didn't read the book, but they're known as Blood and Cheese. So the guy named Cheese, he knows, is like this rat catcher guy that kind of just, he knows his way all throughout the whole kingdom.
So Daemon's main friend, or I guess ally, is the guy, is Blood. And basically in season one,
Daemon
got made captain of the Gold Cloaks, which are kind of the police of King's Landing. King's
Guard-ish police security.
Basically the police of King's Landing in particular, right? And then so he was in charge of them. And then obviously they all had to leave. And so he finds this Gold Coat guy that was still loyal to Damon.
Right.
Right. He's still helping. And then this guy finds, they call him Blood. And then he finds this guy named Cheese. Right. The rat catcher. Right?
Yeah. And so, yeah. So he kind of just does a little funny meek. He was like, all right, you two get together. You two are now the team. They're going to go. And we're going to go and we're going to go murder Eamon. And he warns him, like, hey, man, he's pretty nice with the blade. Just be careful. He definitely sets them up, like, hey, guys, here's what Rhaenyra told me. But what I always find hilarious with everything that happens with Damon in this series is, like, they'll show, like, him saying something, and then we'll kind of cut, and then we're, like, kind of left. We don't hear the whole thing. So stuff is left out, and the only way we hear about it is, like, through aftermath and, like, maybe, like, secondhand information is what I've noticed a lot.
There was this kind of cheeky moment where they asked him, it's like, hey, what if we go up there and we don't find
exactly
Aemon Targaryen?
And it cuts away. Like,
and well, then yeah. And before that, the title of the episode is A Son for a Son.
Yes, very cryptic.
Right? Yeah. So it's not even that cryptic. Like, you have that, okay, like, clearly there's some revenge thing
going on. Eye for an eye, yeah.
Right, eye for an eye. So son for a son. So Rhaenyra lost her son. So the Greens need to lose a son, right? So again, obviously, who Rhaenyra specifies as Aemon Targaryen. But Daemon almost gives kind of a sly, kind of like, you know, like, just get me a son. Get me the head of a son, right?
So you think he kind of knew what he was doing then? Is that what you're – you think he kind of knew he was going to
– he wanted Aemon Targaryen. That was his clear, ideal target.
Uh-huh.
But he also kind of made it clear as, hey, you know, you bring me back a head to get paid.
So it's like,
oh. You bring me back the head of a royal son, of a prince.
If you can make it hurt.
Of a bring prince
back. Yeah,
to get paid. Okay. I want Aemon. I want the guy with one missing eye.
But if you can't.
But if you can't find them.
Okay.
Wink, wink. Okay. Bring me back ahead.
Okay, I see. That's wild. That's wild. And yeah, and like, it definitely plays to that because like, they burst in.
So it's actually played a little bit like a horror thriller at the beginning, right? They're kind of creeping up the castle, right? It's like a buddy cop horror thriller. They're kind of creeping up the castle. It's all dark. They're going into these rooms.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
they're like, you have this anticipation. Like, are they going to stumble into somebody? Are they going to stumble into Aemon?
Yeah, they kind of were. You kind of they weren't playing like Wet Bandits, but it was kind of like, oh, are they gonna?
Yeah, it's like kind of. It was kind of like the Wet Bandits, kind of comical
a little bit,
a little bit comical, but also like a little bit dark, a little.
It leaned more dark. Yeah,
like, you know, it's not Home Alone. It's like Wet Bandits for real.
Just
right?
just for a little bit. Yeah.
Like, the Wet Bandits would have cut Kevin's head off. Right,
Home Alone's like a 2-minute movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the Wet Bandits, but they're not idiots, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of getting up there, trying to find Aemon. We see some of the rooms we've been in previously.
Yeah, that was cool, that too. We've seen the
Greens, and now we're seeing kind of a different perspective. It's kind of more shadowed, kind of darker.
And we now know that Cheese has been through there because he works there, so he knows
all these. It kind of gives this thriller horror vibe, right? Yeah, it was
well executed.
It's a good thriller kind of sequence.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're going around, and they come across, they don't find Aemon, they instead find
Helaena,
the sister wife of Aegon, which is tragic, by the way. They took this girl who is coded to be, I guess, kind of autistic or something.
A little bit, but she has powers-ish, you can see in the future.
Maybe.
She's a seer.
But she just gets forced to marry her own brother.
Yeah, it's not
she
cool.
gets forced to marry her own brother. She does not get a choice in the matter. They have a couple kids by now. They have two kids.
Yeah, there's Jaehaerys at this point. And Jaehaerys.
And she clearly, I mean, she's like this kind soul. He's this drunk,
she's
womanizing
so nice.
Asshole.
She's so nice.
It's tragic for her from her perspective. She's just forced into it.
Helaena doesn't deserve this.
So basically, Blood and Cheese come into this room and they run into her. Mm. Right? They run into her. And so they see these two kids. We have a kind of funny moment where they can't tell which of the kids is a boy and which is a girl.
In the book, I think people keep saying like it's like played more like
it's like darker.
Yeah, darker. Yeah,
we're not gonna go into the books because they're a little bit spoilers, and I don't think either of us have read them.
Yeah, yes.
But yeah, to get like a little bit darker in the books. But so they kind of play it a little comical. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, which one's the boy and which one's the girl, and they decide to basically have the mother. They threaten her, like, hey, you know, you tell us which one is the boy, or we kill all three of you.
Dude, did you think for a second that they're like, oh, since we can't decide, let's just like do them both?
I think they considered it. I think they basically.
I thought that.
I don't even know if decency is the right word. I think they were out there. The only person we were paid to kill is one prince, so that's all we're going to kill, right? It's like,
okay,
they're just fulfilling their contract. They have a weird almost.
Code or
I don't know ethics. If code's the right word. They're just like, we're not going to do work for free, I think it's more like.
No, that's extra, bro.
Yeah, I think, yeah, basically. Like, if the guy had told him to kill all the princes, they probably would have.
Yeah.
Right? So they wanted to kill the specific prince, right? They didn't want to kill, they didn't feel the need or desire to kill additional people just for the sake of it.
Right.
So they, you know, they threaten the mother, and she tells them. They actually believe her.
Oh, that sucks,
She
bro.
Gives up her kid.
That sucks, bro.
And like, they see it in her eyes. She's like, you know what? No, she's like, she could be lying. She's not going to give up the... There's a big deal. Hey, this is the king's heir. This is the heir to the kingdom, technically.
Yeah.
Right? So decision. It's not even about, oh, who's your favorite kid? It's, you know, you just have to protect the heir to the kingdom.
And he knew that she was lying to protect the kingdom, which...
But she didn't. She actually gave away her son for real.
So I guess maybe I... read it differently. I thought she was like trying to pick the one she knew would be the one that she could sadly do away with because the real one's okay.
She picked the real heir one. To the king. She picked the boy. Damn. Like she decided, I guess, we loved her daughter or just scared or being honest or whatever it was. She decided to go through with it.
Right.
So next we have. They don't actually show, but we have one of the most horrifying scenes in Game of Thrones history.
That was enough for me to hear.
They cut this guy,
a baby,
maybe 5-year-old boy's head off.
It's a baby's head off, bro.
They cut it off. You can hear this, like the sawing sound. You don't actually see it because the camera cuts to Elena just running away.
She runs, and we kind of stay.
They let
her
go. They let her go. They don't like stop her.
Which
or anything.
I appreciate it. I was like, come on, right? Just let her.
She
let her
picks
go.
Up her daughter, the one that's still alive. And she just takes off, she knows that, you know, her son's dead, right? And she hears it. We all know it. And there's no hope left.
And she runs to the one place she thinks she'll be safe. It's her mom's room.
She runs to her mom's room.
Yeah. Who wouldn't run to their mom's room after something horrible like that?
And her mom's getting it all with Krispy Kreme.
But Helena's like nonplussed because she's seen the worst thing ever.
Helena is legit, I think, autistic.
But she's also seen the worst thing ever. Yeah,
She doesn't even. She's not even like screaming or crying. She just looks at Allison like hooking up with Krispy Kreme, and she just says, "What is it? The heir is dead."
Yep. You're like, no. Shit, the boy is dead.
The boy is dead. The boy is dead. That's all she says. Man. Fade to black. My God, that's such a good sequence. That's up there with some of the great Game of Thrones sequences.
And like, it's so Game of Thrones because you know they don't mess around. That this is Game of Thrones, but like, even for them, you're like, oh, I didn't even imagine. Like, remember earlier when Cheese kicked that dog?
Yeah, he seemed to be so kind to his own dog, and like, then it got like he literally carried him up the tower with him, and then the dog got slightly inconvenient. I think actually Cheese was doing it in part to help the dog.
To like tell him to go look. He's like, that's how he tells him to go look for rats.
It's kind of not just that. If you ever watch like Meet the Hendersons, it's like, get away, dog. Like, you know, like Cheese knew going up top to where all the royals were was a bad idea. He just wanted to put Blood, say, hey, here's where you have to go. You go kill them. And Blood's like, no. We don't get shit unless we both go and
together.
Kill them.
Yeah. I love how the internet's ready to cancel Cheese. Not for cutting a baby's head off, but for kicking a dog.
It's not the baby cutting. It's
not. Game of Thrones fans have a line. I guess have a line.
They're very desensitized to violence. You know, again, through it all, there have not been a lot of scenes where a 6-year-old kid gets brutally beheaded in his own bed.
Yeah,
right?
it's awful. Like the work.
We've seen some cold stuff. We've seen a pregnant lady get stabbed in the stomach.
We saw Bran get pushed out of a window.
We did see a little girl, a 6-year-old girl, get lit on fire. So that was pretty, pretty rough as well. But still, this was so gruesome.
Yeah, it was especially sad and harrowing. And now I'm just thinking, because now, like, look at if you're Team Green, you're weak. You're weakened now because not only have they taken out your heir, but now they've done it inside your home. It's one thing to like on the battlefield you fight and you take an L, but you got an L on your home court in your like private room. Like they can get you anywhere. And like now,
it does. It's a bad look for them. It's also. To this point, Alicent has been a little bit reticent to go full on. She doesn't want wanton violence. She doesn't want needless death. This is probably the tipping point.
Oh, yeah.
Frankly, I mean, you know, for all Aegon's faults, he seemed to love his kid.
He did. That little scene where he's like, hey, Ben, can you take him?
Yeah, he brought him to the small throne.
Took him to work day.
Council. Yeah.
take your son to work day.
had him bully the Lannister dude.
Give him a pony ride. I was like, come on, man.
No, so he loved this kid. For all his faults, he loved this kid.
Yeah.
And he seems to know he's not like fit to be king, for all you want to say. He doesn't really want to be king. But now they killed his son.
Yeah, something like this.
And I mean, not just killed his son. They beheaded his son in his bed.
And Daemon said, bring me the head. So like when they bury him, it's like,
they desecrated
the body. It's like a lot of stuff. So now I'm thinking with the Greens now weakened.
So the Greens are going to be, you know, now the violence, now the rage is on both sides. Even on the Blacks, probably Rhaenyra is not going to be super happy with Daemon going off and killing a 5-year-old.
Right. Yeah, she won't be happy, but I think Rhaenyra is so far gone now. I think she's like, hey, I don't like it, but it is what it is.
We've seen the sequence of events play out.
Where
at any point the war could have been averted. At any point there could have been a happy family, could have found some way to get along.
Maybe not happy, but you know, just
I found existing. Some way to be peacefully
existing.
Coexist.
Yeah, yeah.
And these little misunderstandings, these little moments, these little choices characters make. That's what I love about this show. It's you're seeing the effects of decisions the characters make.
Exactly.
As opposed to just some plot written out and characters being forced to follow it. These decisions are all believable, and the consequences they have are believable as well.
And to piggyback off that, these are also just very well-written characters. So when they're put into these often harrowing situations, like you're with them for the ride. And again, it's also laid out in a way that's just, you know, interesting and just so compelling. It's the perfect storm of just writing. And I love that they've kept the same energy from Game of Thrones going into House of Dragons season 2 to where now folks are like even saying, what do I like more, like GOT or House of the Dragon? And it's like, I love that. I love how, like, you know, with the way Game of Thrones ended, I personally didn't hate the ending as much as everyone else did, but the way it ended, it definitely put a lot of people off. So to see this kind of bring those same people back on is a testament. It's amazing.
I mean, considering I still, you know, even in the pandemic, if you remember the pandemic, everybody was rewatching old shows. Everybody was stuck inside. Mm-hmm. Nobody was rewatching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it didn't, you know, like,
people were rewatching The Office. People were rewatching all kinds of nonsense. Nobody was rewatching Game of Thrones. That's how bad the ending.
It turned a lot of people off.
It destroyed the reputation of that show.
And watching it, granted, I enjoyed the final season, but I definitely see how and why it turned people off.
You know, it's funny. I enjoyed the final season compared to most people, but only because I had such low expectations. Like, most people were like, "Oh my god, it's like Game of Thrones season 8 is going to be so great," and I was like, "Guys, season 8 was season 7 was absolute garbage television. These guys clearly don't know what they're doing. They have no idea how to finish the story." I had fun with what was there because I had low expectations, but I could see why so many people were so upset. You know, I didn't think it was good. I just thought, like, oh, okay, I got to enjoy the good parts about it because I didn't have any expectations that the story was going to end in a satisfying way.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was, like, good, even great in some aspects, but could definitely see the definite problems and just continuity stuff just didn't pay off. Different
stuff
things
was just rushed.
Yeah, definitely. I will never refute
stuff
that.
Was just rushed.
Yeah. But with that being said, even with all that, having House of Dragon be the huge hit that it is, and like it's firing all cylinders, this is amazing.
It's a top tier show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
It brings back. It's a different show. It brings back some of the great elements of Game of Thrones, though.
Yeah.
And it's all written out already, so we hopefully won't have the problem of the show creators having to make stuff up along the way halfway through.
My thing is halfway through filming this. The thing about that argument is I don't mind, and when we've seen it in literature and film and everything, I don't mind if people make stuff up based on what's pre-written. Have it make sense and have it work out.
That's a problem.
That's all.
DB.
That's really all it is.
Douchebag and douchebag. Double douchebag. Yeah, DB and DB. They did not know how to finish that story. That's point blank. Season 7 was awful. Season 8 was awful. I don't know if awful is the right word, but it wasn't great.
It definitely had its best season. I still say it's 5. I still think I love 5.
My personal favorite was 6, actually.
Definitely. 6 is number 2. But those back-to-back were bangers.
I mean, seasons 1 through 6 were all excellent for the most part.
Yeah. But yeah, man.
But yeah, hopefully it keeps up. We'll probably have some more reviews. Maybe it finishes, well, at least when the season finishes. Oh, yeah,
definitely when the series, definitely when the season finishes. Definitely have to recap.
Definitely some exciting times in TV these next few weeks.
Yes, sir.
All right, so I think that's it for most of our content today. You know, I did want to riff on something we didn't go over.
Oh man, Kelsey. we did forget that.
Kelsey,
you want to do that now?
Yeah, you see Justin Timberlake's mugshot? He's crying me a river of tequila, Kelsey. It's not even May, Kelsey. It's not even May.
But it's going to be when he gets out of jail. Man, I don't know. I don't want him to go to jail, but a DUI is...
He's already in jail, bro.
He is... Okay, he's there. Okay.
He'd probably post a bail.
He'd probably post a bail. Yeah, it's not a good look.
I mean, you don't get a mugshot if you're not going to jail, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not good. It's crazy, man.
No, I mean, it's a DUI. Apparently, he didn't let them take a breathalyzer, I believe.
They didn't let him, or he refused.
He refused. Oh, I mean, they obviously wanted him to. You're allowed to refuse it. I mean, honestly, man, you in the mugshot, which had to have been after the cop ride, so you're talking probably guesstimating at least 30 minutes past where he got arrested, so hopefully at least 30, 45 minutes after he had his last drink. Kosi, his eyes... It looked like marbles.
It looked like... Remember that mugshot for Tiger Woods? It looked like that. Like, his eyes were like that.
Tiger Woods looked like he was on drugs. This guy...
He looked drunk to me, but...
He looked so drunk.
Yeah.
This Justin Timberlake looks so drunk. Probably at least a little bit of weed.
He looks like he's trying not to laugh.
I thought he was looking like he was trying not to cry.
Oh, or that. Okay.
Both, honestly. It looks like he's...
a little bit of both.
He looks like he's drunk enough to start laughing and then realize how stupid he's being and start crying at his situation.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where you can't help it. You just... Like, all your emotions just flow out.
Yeah. No, it's humiliating. You know, he's... You know,
it looks sad, man.
In this age of, you know, we have Uber. Well, it was up in the Hamptons, so I guess...
We have Uber. I mean, I know you're a famous guy. You tell me Justin Timberlake can't afford to have some guy in his entourage or something come pick him up?
Or someone just take the keys out of his hands. I don't know. Maybe
I feel like Justin Timberlake's made enough money.
Yeah. I hope he's not like going through something. That's all.
Just some dumb stuff. You know who's probably smiling right now? Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson said, "I told you so."
Britney Spears having a chuckle as well.
She's doing an interpretive dance in her mirror right now, but stopped to just be like, "Oh, for real? We got him? You know, what happened now?
Is that who's the crazy one now?"
Yeah.
Well, dancing with knives on the side.
She pop locking like,
pop locking with knives and guns and shit.
No, like, I think with this, you know, everyone's kind of having like a, you know, they're having a go at Justin Timberlake. Folks are trying to like pull up stuff from his past because, you know, everyone does that. It's kind of how the internet works. Like, once something major happens to you, they start saying,
"Oh, love tearing celebrities down."
Yeah. So
as much as they love building them up, they love tearing them down just as much.
Yeah. But all I'm seeing now is just the DOI and just how, you know, he's out. Yeah. As you said, he's out, made bail. He's hopefully just working towards...
Yeah, I mean, he was going to make bail. I mean, he's not a threat to society.
Yeah, frankly. I don't know if he had... I don't know if it's true. I think he had, like, a concert series coming up. Like, it's like he was in the works, so...
Really? That's not going to be a good look for them.
Yeah, I hope... Look, sending just positive energy to Justin Timberlake, you know?
I'm still just ripping on him for now. If we find out he's, like, an alcoholic and his life is falling apart, maybe feel bad.
You know, just in case you suck, now, yeah, screw you, man. In case.
Let's make fun of Justin Timberlake, man. Justin Timberlake, man. It's a funny look.
Dude, remember Sexy Back? That was
I'm bringing Sexy Back.
My sophomore year of high school, like, homecoming dance. That whole album. Future Sex Love Songs was...
Summer Love.
Excellent.
Summer Love was excellent music.
Yep. Love Stone. Yes. Oh, man. It was just a... Yeah.
I mean, Love Stone.
Yeah.
I think that she knows.
He was doing the Beyonce thing before Beyonce did it. He just was
that
like...
That was nonstop hits on that album. I think they had like six singles, and all of them were number one hits.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember not number one, but you know what I'm talking about. It was all like top tier stuff.
They're all like basically bangers. Yeah.
But yeah, no... hopefully we get some more funny celebrity happenings, because it's always fun to rip on celebrities, y'all. You know, they're richer than us. They feel superior to us. It's nice to see him knocked down a level.
Yeah, take that.
Loser. But it's time for plug of the week, Kosi.
Oh, man. Let's see here. So for my plug of the week, let me make sure I got this one correct.
Because you can't remember his own plug, yo.
Can you go first while I make sure I pull this one up?
I mean, I was just kidding, but it's true.
Okay.
No, yo, I'm gonna take a second and plug The Boys. Briefly mentioned earlier, but if y'all haven't watched it, it's a big series, so maybe hopefully a lot of y'all have. Awesome superhero show. It's basically an inversion of your typical superhero series, where instead of the superheroes being the good guys or being good guy superheroes versus bad guy superheroes, the super guys for the most part are universally crappy. It's this kind of parody of Marvel and DC.
A little bit, like if they're real, if they're corporate.
It's kind of if they were real, but if it's like a corporate structure that we see movies being made exactly like Marvel makes them.
Yeah.
And stuff like looks exactly like kind of a Marvel movie, but it's all fake. The superheroes are all assholes who party and, you know, accidentally kill regular people.
Do horrible really things to people.
Feeling about it. I want to talk about gruesomely, destructively. It's a very gory show. We've seen some wild stuff. Probably wildest scene we've seen so far. Remember that guy who exploded inside of another guy's dick?
Oh, man, yeah.
Imagine Ant-Man getting tiny, walking inside of another man's penis, then sneezing and getting big instantaneously.
That's how they should have defeated Thanos, but they just didn't think of that yet.
That joke about Ant-Man going up Thanos' asshole and getting big, they literally did that in The Boys.
They weren't thinking big enough, but The Boys were, so.
It was very horrifying. It has one of the best depictions of evil Superman I've seen. Evil Superman is usually like this hyper-competent, you know, just Superman, but he does bad things and he destroys things.
Yeah, what if Superman were evil?
We've seen Invincible have an evil Superman. We've seen actual evil Superman. Usually have this kind of competent, like, real, awesome badass is terrifying. In this show, the evil Superman is this needy, emotionally stunted man-child who has the power to destroy the world.
The Homelander.
Right? He literally has the power to destroy everything, kill anybody, but he's desperate for attention, desperate for love. He got raised basically in a test tube kind of lab situation. No idea how to interact with other human beings. Anthony Starr, you know, fascinating show overall. Definitely highly recommend it. Cozy, you find your plug of the week yet?
So no. My plug of the week, I'm gonna have to swerve off of it. But I'm gonna plug actually one of my favorite movies that I've watched recently. It's a movie called Eighth Grade. It's a movie by
great movie.
Yeah, movie by Bo Burnham. So Bo Burnham, if you guys know, he's a comedian but turned like musician turned director. So this movie stars Elsie Fisher. It came out in 2018, and the reason why I wanted to plug this because I was watching it actually just a couple days ago, and it's a movie that, you know, a lot of times people from like older people like to like yell at like younger generation, say, oh, you guys are so lazy, or you guys are this and that, or you guys, and like kind of like say disparagingly about the younger people. The depiction of just younger, I guess, would they be Gen Zers? 6 years ago, if you were eighth grade,
so.
I'm guessing.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, just depicting how such a pivotal time that the transition from middle school to high school. I remember just being in that space and just it was awkward. But now, what eighth grade the movie showed is now imagine all the anxiety of, you know, puberty, making new friends, going to a new school. But imagine having like a phone and social media and folks, and imagine your bullies can get you at home, and imagine like you're always like you're not really looking at life. So like it was a movie that kind of really made me like understand a lot of where that generation was coming from and really level with them a lot. And I just love Bo Burnham's work. He's a funny guy, a guy I've, you know, watched on Vine, and just seeing his whole, you know, career just take off. So yeah, so Eighth Grade, you can find, it's not currently on a streaming service. I know you can, it's you can definitely rent it on, you know, like on a Vudu or Apple and whatnot. But yeah, it's a great film. I recommend it. And I love it. So yeah, it's my plug.
All right. Good plug, Kosa.
Yeah, man. But dude, I guess that's it, man, for the show. I'm
that's Juan. It for this show.
Dude, thank you. Thank you for coming on here. And thank you, audience. Thank you to all our listeners. And once again, guys, you can like and subscribe to our channel on Spotify. Just search It Was Mooney on Spotify. Also, you can subscribe to our channel on YouTube, where you can get the same exact podcast episodes, but on our YouTube channel, along with other types of content. But once again, I've been Kosi, and I'm joined always by Juan. And once again, until next time, guys, peace.
Adios.